Good morning. Thank you very much, Dr. Montandon, Dr. Spohn, and certainly Dr. Kurt Vincent for organizing this beautiful meeting in this historic place and for all your kind hospitality. I took the liberty to change the title a little bit, not to take anything away, but to take you through my journey in cleft surgery and to show you what how I started and where we are now. Certainly, it's a great honor to be in this historic hall. I got to hear the name Billroth when I was very, very young, and I observed my father, my late father, in doing his Billroth 1 gastrectomies. And since then, I had the opportunity to do several myself in my previous life. greetings from Chicago. It's not always cold, as it shows in this picture right across from my window. And greetings from the Craniofacial Center at the University of Illinois. We celebrated 65 years, certainly 65 years when we are in a place like the Billroth Hall doesn't seem very much yet for the organized craniofacial centers. It's a long time. And I always give credit to the founder of our center, Sam Pruzanski, who also taught me critical ways of managing and evaluating, above all, results. He single-handedly organized the concept of a team approach and was able to bring a team of specialists under one roof. For those of you interested in looking at his thinking, this is an article where he summarizes his thoughts on the foundation of the Craniofacial Center at the University of Illinois. He was brilliant, and he early on realized what was happening with craniofacial surgery, and he brought Tessier in right away as soon as the meeting in Rome took place and the first results of craniofacial surgery were described, and gave a direction to craniofacial surgery as well, where my associate Praveen Patel is really taking the lead, not only in the university but around the country. What is our mission? Our mission is to treat longitudinal patients in the cutting edge care, provide education for residents, fellows, and students, do research, basic and clinical, be advocates of our patients in different fora, provide with international volunteer surgery and philanthropy, which is necessary maybe it's not as necessary in Europe, but definitely around us is absolutely necessary in order to be able to sustain what we're doing. And of course, we have coordinated care with our environment, our people, our orthodontists, speech, pediatric dentistry, pediatricians, psychologists. We use telemedicine, and we have several other initiatives. And before going further, I want to make sure that everybody, there are several, many protocols for managing patients with care, and I'm not implying that this is the best protocol, but these protocols have worked very well with us for many, many years, and this is what I would present for you. However, this model of interdisciplinary care, although very efficient, can be very expensive, and most insurance carriers cover a fraction of the actual cost, because we're not only talking about surgery, but we're talking about every element directed to management of patients with clefts. So we are fortunate enough to have a group of volunteers. Now the current group is called Face the Future Foundation, and through their incredible work, we got a lot of money that helps us sustain, as I said, not the surgeon's salaries, but areas that wouldn't be covered with insurance. So we are able to provide every child in our center with the same state-of-the-art care. Our statistics, we have over 5,000 active patients right now. There are over 6,600 clinic visits annually and over 570 new patients. And you can see a laundry list of all the specialists that are involved with our craniofacial center. I want you to hear it clearly that the difference and the reason we are very proud of what we have is that our center works every day of the week. There are specialists every day of the week. I'm not there every day, of course. Dr. Patel is not there every day, but the team of specialists is there. So the children and the infants and the young adults are taken care in continuity under the same roof. And this is a list of our specialists. You all probably familiar with the team approach for the has become many years after Pruzanski's initial writing has become the standard of care, and it is important for the non for the people that are not involved with patient with patients with clefts to understand, and that particularly pertains also to government agencies and insurance carriers, that the team approach is really the way to go, because these children have complex issues that are beyond the surgery, and we have to manage all of them in order to be successful. And what is the responsibility of the team, among others, not only taking care of patients, but maintaining records, periodic patient evaluations, review of patient progress, timely management of unfavorable results and residual deformities, evaluation of psychosocial status, progress at school, etc., and sometimes modification and improvement of our protocols as we keep going on evaluating our results. So, as you heard, we're dealing, thanks to Dr. Patel and Dr. Morris, my craniofacial associates, a significant variety of craniofacial issues. However, my focus will be directed today on the protocols for cleft lip and palate surgery. And we all know that these patients born with clefts require the care of many physicians and allied health specialists. They undergo several surgical procedures from birth to adulthood to achieve total functional, aesthetic, and psychosocial habilitation. And here is Maria, one of my first patients. I always quiz my residents, because when I started, this type of patients would have maybe 10, 15 sometimes procedures and not always look very good. Well, she only had a lip repair, a palate repair. She had twice meningotomy tubes. She had orthodontic treatment, alveolar bone graft and closure of the fistula, and speech therapy. And it is important, because when we're talking to other people about procedures, we forget ENT management, we forget speech, we forget orthodontic treatment, and all these aspects of care are very important and should be discussed as a total. So we start with complete evaluation, understanding the extent of the cleft, coexisting craniofacial anomalies, if any, coexisting other congenital anomalies, genetic counseling. Of course, not everybody needs or is a candidate for that, but it's important to evaluate the patients and the family and counsel them about future pregnancies. Initial evaluation, psychologic evaluation. Again, insurance company says, this is an infant, a newborn. Why do you need psychologic evaluation? Well, you need the psychologic evaluation of the parents and the siblings in order for the child to grow in a stable environment. And our initial evaluation also includes parents' education, what's wrong with their baby, feeding techniques, what can be done, when, short and long-term treatment plans, brochures, DVDs, and support groups, which are very, very important, and we're fortunate to have a lot of parents that volunteer their services. They are parents of children that we treated already, and they provide excellent support to the newcomers. Now, wherever you see red in the slide are activities that did not happen 30 years ago, and one of them is prenatal consultation. We have a strong OBGYN department, and they are very good in identifying clefts and other anomalies in utero. They send these mothers ahead of time, these prospective mothers. We evaluate them, we give them an outline because we really don't know the extent of the cleft, and we help them and support them until the delivery, and then our nurses go in, they teach them feeding and other important issues until we go on for the surgery. Those are all pictures on purpose because this is what Dr. Pruzanski first established: pictures, radiographs, and cephalometics. He was also very strong in keeping casts, and every single patient for many, many decades had casts before and after. Those are the means to do evaluation and 3D evaluation at the time. And I'm sure you're aware from the literature of how many papers have been published demonstrating results. We challenged this concept many years ago. You know, it's growing up at the Craniofacial Center, you would hear Pruzanski arguing and saying, no, 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 this is not the way. You have to think it more carefully. So we tried to obey to his philosophies by challenging what we're doing all the time, and that's beneficial, of course. So we challenged the concept of casts, and several years back we realized that the 3D technology is equally as good. Not only that, but sometimes with the cast you might press the soft tissues and you have a little distortion, as opposed with a 3D that really gives you a, so. And of course, by now we all know what benefits the 3D technology has. And we use, of course, the cutting edge technology to evaluate the patients, and we are fortunate to have a lot of nice 3D toys, 3D pictures and scans in our facility, and through those we're able, A, to provide better planning and evaluation for our patients, but also longitudinal follow-up of what is happening in surgery. So we're working as a group, we are all under the same roof. After the initial evaluation, there is staffing around the table, preoperative orthopedics. Again, that's new with the numb and taping, lip repair as soon as possible, palate repair, again, in red, prior to the development of articulation partners and PE tubes if needed, speech evaluation and management, orthodontic treatment, bone grafting or residual alveolar clefts and maxillary clefts, scar revisions, nasal reconstruction, and I have a question mark with orthognathic surgery, because this can be moved in different years of life now with the destruction of the osteogenesis, which didn't exist, of course, at the time. Preoperative orthopedics had been a controversy, passive versus active, why to do it, management. Early on, we got involved with the NYU team in the use of nasoalveolar molding, and this has become a very nice addition in the preparation of the patient with complete cleft lips, unilateral or bilateral. This is the initial design, and notice how crude it is, but it did the job. And then from there you can see, and unmistakably you can see the nose before the surgery, but before the treatment, and just after treatment, look how nice the curve you have achieved. And then of course we are able to achieve a nice nasal result at the time of lip repair. We modified the NAM many years ago, and we published this report. It's very easy. It's all custom made at our center. Our prosthodontists are taking care of impressions and managing them. And then the patient comes in, and just with a plier, we arrange and coordinate the position of the NAM on a weekly basis. So what do we do for the unilateral cleft lip and palate? Complete evaluation, of course, has always been happening, but we do now preoperative orthopedics. We use the NAM appliance and also taping across the lip, and there are weekly evaluation and adjustment, which is good, but on the same time, it can be considered a drawback because it requires the parents to take time off from work, etc. And we repair the lip around age 2 to 3 months, assuming that the patient is in good general health. No lip adhesions. I don't like to say never, but really I hate lip adhesions and I have no interest in doing any. We can talk. Somebody might have arguments, but we can talk later. And no primary bone grafting. Certainly, alveoloplasty, if the two segments of the gum are coming together, then we perform alveoloplasty, and there's no question that at the same time we proceed with simultaneous correction of the nasal deformity, which was a taboo 30 years ago, and we'll talk about that this afternoon. So for the youngers in the group, objectives of cleft lip repair, slight lip eversion, symmetrical nostril floor, a minimal scar, accurate skin and muscle. Muscle was not incorporated in the initial descriptions of lip repair, including the original Millard rotation advancement procedures, and certainly simultaneous correction of the nasal deformity. We use primarily rotation and advancement modification techniques. In the past, I used to do also triangular flap, a modification of the triangular flap, but no longer. The results are very good, but you always have a triangle in the philtrum, which I don't care for. And then simultaneous correction of the nasal deformity. I'm not here to show you good or bad examples, but just some examples of lip repairs. And here's an example of a triangular flap. Again, the lip is good, the nose is good, but if you go very close, you will see the triangle. And not only short results, but long-term results. Here is Kia. She is now enrolled in culinary school after several procedures. And Joe, he's an architect. Let's talk about bilateral cleft lips. Certainly the problem is the protruding premaxilla. This picture is actually from Dr. Pruzanski's archive, and he was very proud with this bonnet with a strap across the premaxilla, because of course the premaxilla is the problem. What do we do? We repair around age 4 to 5 months. No lip adhesions again. In the past, some people in the team floated the idea of stage one side at a time. I don't think that it's appropriate. Definitely it's not appropriate. And then, of course, we do preoperative orthopedics again. We position the premaxilla, and I'll show you how. And as far as techniques, Millard technique, but in addition, Nordhoff and Millikan, which address the nose also. definitely management of the orbicularis oris and simultaneously management of the nasal deformities. And this is the first article that my associate, Dr. David Risberg, he is a prominent prostodontist and a member of our center. Incidentally, within the craniofacial center, we have the craniofacial clinic and the maxillofacial prosthetics clinics, again, under one roof. And so this is a very clever initial invention where you see there is a plate and a wide rubber band that is adjusted every week with super glue, and it helps us bring the premaxilla down from almost 90 degrees to the occlusal plane and facilitate repair. We went on and modified this appliance, and it's really a very nice appliance. We actually went a step further and combined this premaxilla position with NAMS bilateral. And the beauty of this is, particular in clefts that are asymmetric, you can change the, as you can see here, this one goes straight, this one is curved. The effort is always to bring the tip together. And again, you can see results of the premaxilla positioner, and at a holiday party we have every year for our patients. Again, here is a long-term result, initial treatment with the initial design, before and after. And there is Krishna, he's in college. He only had a procedure for the lip once, a procedure for the palate, a procedure for bone graft, and the nose. No other procedures. Again, compare these results to some of the results we see not only when we travel abroad, but within the United States as well. How about cleft palate repair? That has always been a controversy. The plastic surgeons want to go forward. The orthodontists want to wait for the fear of growth disturbances. The speech pathologists definitely want to go first as soon as possible. So the debate was going on and on and on. And I think we've solved the problem. The palatoplasty, it used to be delayed for 18 to 24 months with the fear of growth disturbances. But now we exclusively repair the palate before the first birthday because this is when you get the articulation development, and it has been shown, and I'll show you in a second, that the earlier you repair the palate, then the better result in speech. We used to use von Langebaert and pushback techniques. Now I use mostly two-flap palatoplasty and furlough Z-plasties when needed. No primary pharyngeal flaps. And this is the reports I was referring to. Deborah Dorf, who is a very talented speech therapist at our center, unfortunately she died at a very young age. And so that was the first report. She actually was the engine behind, because she has done a lot of evaluation of these kids. And even if there was no real VPI, there were significant articulation problems, and those were very difficult to correct with speech therapy. We reevaluate our results 10 years later, and as a follow-up of this second study, there was a result on the growths also, and I don't have the time to put all this, but we proved that not only the speech results are better, but there is no deleterious effect on the facial growth. Technical aspects of palatoplasty, you have to release the muscles, you have to put the muscles together. We use Vomer flap as needed, and definitely close under no tension. And you all know about the furlough palatoplasty, which is a newer addition. I'm showing this kid because in the past, techniques for Pierre Robin management would be prone position, nasopharyngeal tubing, et cetera, et cetera. And then distraction came alone. And Dr. Patel has a large series of managing these patients. Those are from his series. And so with distraction of osteogenesis, you can see this poor kid intubated, cannot breathe, cannot eat, and then with the destructor in place, a different kid within a couple of weeks. Again, look how you start, and then this is what happens. Definitely, we work very close with ENT. We have an audiologist in the center. They prepare the patient in preparation for the surgery. And then at the time of lip or palate repair, the ENT service proceeds with microscopic evaluation and placement of tubes. Post-operative care, definitely completely different approach from what I grew up with in plastic surgery. Unrestricted feeding immediately, be it breastfeeding, be it feeding. Look what used to happen. They had these medieval tubes and other elements such as this, the log and bow they used to call it. Of course, when you close a lip under tension and you pray and you expect this bow to hold the lip together, you know that you have not done a good job in first place. And arm restraints, I don't use at all. Speech evaluation around 2.5, 3 years old. First you start with questionnaire and history, perceptual evaluation, anatomic evaluation, cephalometric evaluation. Prusansky was very big in cephalometric analysis, but we've added analysis of with endoscopy and in selected cases, MRI, as I'll show you. And definitely, an advantage that we have is the use of physiologic evaluation with the nasometer and pressure flow to get a very good understanding of what is happening and manage the patients accordingly. So in addition to the speech evaluation and the perceptual evaluation, this is the cephalometric analysis at rest and when the patients are phonating, and you can see the movement. Actually, Prusansky at the time had developed a formula to measure the distance of the palate to the pharyngeal wall and develop in square millimeters the gap and everything else. Of course, all this is also for historical purposes. This is a study we did some years ago. Not for every patient, for patients that come in with speech that is inconsistent, they had already their palatoplasty, and you can see clearly that there are areas where you have a dehiscence in a specific muscle, and then from this information, you go back and you repair accordingly. Nasopharyngoscopy, I used to do it many, many years ago. You can see the picture. I used to have black hair at the time, but it's a great information. And as a surgeon, I really believe that the surgeon should be doing the nasopharyngoscopy to get as much information as possible, because we are the ones who will be using this information in the operating room. Rhinomanometry is a new addition. I was fortunate enough to work with a team of speech pathologists at the center who were instrumental in developing different rhinomanometry techniques. And you get, rhinomanometry is the only objective method to quantify nasal airway patency by measuring air pressures and flow during breathing. And the nasal airway resistance is then derived from measurements, the airflow rate to the pressure drop. And we'll talk about that this afternoon during the nasal management. So what do we do for VPI or VPD, velopharyngeal dysfunction? Speech therapy for sure. if the palate is judged to be short or the muscles are not released completely, redo palatoplasty or even furlough, that is going to give you a couple of more millimeters of length. Pharyngeal flap, pharyngoplasty, I really don't use retropharyngeal implants, but one area I'm very interested is fat injections. There has been studies that demonstrate very well that in mild VPI, fat injection can do very well. My friend Riccardo Mazzola from Milano has presented significant work on this. Again, we don't have the final, but it appears that the fat injection can be an addition to a more aggressive procedure like a pharyngeal flap, and prosthetics when needed. One needs to know when to stop. This poor kid had, she's four, she had six procedures to close the palate. Well, I know that I can do it, but I would rather wait right now, but we need to protect the speech. So this is when our prosthetic department is going to put an obturator that will help her speak properly, and then we come back and do our tongue flaps or whatever needs to be done in a later stage. 4 to 8 years, we proceed with lip revisions, closure of palatal fistulas, correction of pharyngeal, of velopharyngeal insufficiency, tip rhinoplasty, and septoplasty. You see, I have it in red because nobody would dare to do a septoplasty in a growing kid. There is a lot of information, and mostly started from the German literature for trauma, where and people that had there were some kids that had sleep apnea from the obstruction. And so you just take the whole septum out, you manipulate the septum and put it back, and there are long-term results demonstrating that this is not going to create a problem in growth. Again, you need to know what you're doing and you need to use your judgment. This is not a procedure to be done on a regular basis. Lip revisions, I can write a book, I'm writing a book on unfavorable results, but this young lady had 17 procedures and still the lip is tight and still she has problems, and nobody addressed the intraoral scar. You can see it's like a cord tethering the lip. You've got to address every element of the deformity at the same time. And look, this is just by excising the scar. Look at how much defect you have. And the final result, nice and soft lip. It's not perfect, but now we use fat injection also for recontouring small deformities. And by the way, there is no code to charge for, so that's, we do it anyway. Palatal fistulas, a great problem altogether. The best thing is to avoid them, but no matter what, in the best hands, you're gonna have a couple of them. And depends on the location, depend on the size, but you have to think why you failed the first time, and you have to address the issue by creating all three layers of the palatal repair. And in extreme situations, very large defects, tongue flap. Of course, this is not a procedure to be done in a young age. This young man was 8 years old, and you can see the final result. Orthodontic treatment. Pruzanski was an orthodontist himself, so he was big in management, the orthodontic aspect of the procedure. Now we have a very sophisticated group of orthodontists who also use the current technology to manage these patients. A word about primary bone grafting. Yes, when the gum is coming together, then alveoloplasty, as I said earlier, can be performed. I had the opportunity to see a large number of patients who underwent immediate or early bone grafting in another institution. There is no question they get significant malocclusion. And actually, Sam Berkowitz evaluated Millard's results after the Latham device, and he came up with the conclusion that the results of malocclusion are even worse than if you had just let go and come back and correct the malocclusion. The other thing that is important is this is a patient that is, had undergone what was named as a successful bone graft. But remember that the bone graft is not supposed to be just a bridge of bone, but it's supposed to reconstruct the entire maxilla. And therefore, you can see here how much bone there is missing. And so if you're going to think of the platform for the nose without a bone graft, it's not going to be very good. This is actually another paper from the literature, and they describe it as a successful primary bone graft. Well, look at the fissure in there. There is no bone. Anyway, so alveolar bone graft, primarily secondary bone graft. This is where the old man failed. And like every genius, you cannot expect everything. Pruzanski published this paper in 64, and he was, but it is important to read this article because you appreciate his critical thinking. And he actually calls primary orthopedics a barbaric technique. He, at the end, he softened down and, but let's not forget that giants are not always right, and this, of course, is the famous painting of Bill Roth in the Belvedere, and he's quoted as saying that the surgeon who tries to suture a heart wound deserves to lose the esteem of his colleagues. So famous people make some mistakes also. Thanks to my predecessor, Dr. Richard Schultz, who studied with in Sweden with Skog, he came back and he suggested to Pruzanski respectfully, okay, let's not put bone, but can we put some periosteal graft? And those are that's why you can tell the old slides. But he started doing periosteal grafts, and we saw bone there, but not the exact bone that you want to see, the reconstruction of the entire cleft maxilla. We followed up on this and start doing bone graft, and you can imagine at the time nobody had a bone graft, so we had a backlog of patients getting bone graft. What is very important, again, and some of you dentists, we know already, that the timing for bone grafting is very important. There has been all this sort of literature where it's got to be 3 years old, five, nine. No, it's got to be the dental, not the chronologic age. You have to have an arch alignment, dental alignment, but now it used to be before the eruption of the canine, or they would say three-thirds of the root. Now we bone graft much earlier, before the latter, the eruption of lateral incisors, in patient with complete clefts of cleft lip and palate, because if they only have a cleft lip, you can bone graft earlier also. And this is another no-no. The easy way out, take a little mucosa graft flap from the labia and turn it down. I apologize for the slide, but that's the best I could do on an old slide. And you can see that the flap comes across, cover the bone graft, but there is no tooth that can erupt through this type of tissue. We presented our work on flap design with the gingival mucoperiosteal flaps many years ago, and definitely this is the way to go. You have to use cancellous bone, pack the cavity all the way down to provide support. That's good, not only for the closing the fistula, but observe what happens in the nose just with the bone grafting. And so we set the stage for the nasal reconstruction. And we have example after example of very successful bone grafting and eruption of teeth through the bone graft. And bilaterals. Certainly you need the help of the orthodontists to support the second stage orthodontics after the bone grafting to complete the treatment. Correction of cleft nasal deformity will follow this afternoon. Orthognathic surgery, again, these slides are courtesy Dr. Patel. Orthognathic surgery is an important addition to the management of patients with clefts. Destruction of osteogenesis, no question, new. And by the way, John Pauli was my former associate. He's the one who first described the red frame at the University of Illinois. How about new technology before closing? Well, you will see much more as we progress, but planning of the facial skeletal surgery is very important. We went away from the conventional techniques to the virtual planning with 3D photographs, cone beam, 3D visualization, planning of the osteotomies, and all this is done at the craniofacial center. And again, you can see all sorts of changes that can happen and plan the final plan without surgery. Or print a 3D model that you take in the operating room. We're about to get a big printer ourselves so that we don't have to spend money in other companies. And project the changes in the soft tissue as well. Finally, also integration has become an important part. Dr. Benamar just died last year, but he was an orthopedic surgeon, and yet he revolutionized the field, and you all know about that. We don't put implants in on regular basis, but we definitely take care of our own patients. Thanks to our prosthetic department, we go to the operating room with an accurate plan, put the implants, and provide the kids with a great smile. And on the same line, we use the Baha technology for some of our patients with hearing loss. This is the initial generation of Bahas that had always a problem because there was an abutment in the interface between skin, and it was breaking down and got infections. And now we started using the new Baha, which is a magnet, and therefore there is no abutment, and the processor goes right in the skin. Future, advances in genetics, maybe they will put us out of business in terms of managing clefts, stem cells, tissue engineering, imaging, virtual planning, robotic surgery, you name it. The bottom line is we're trying our best. We take kids that are scarred by nature, and we're happy to see them becoming functional citizens. Thank you.